Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Catholic Church continues to struggle with the fallout of its staggering sexual abuse scandal. Just yesterday, the Chicago Archdiocese announced it removed 11 priests suspected of sexual misconduct with minors. And under the new leadership of Pope Benedict XVI, the Vatican is forging a new path, taking a hard look at whether it should bar gay men from entering the priesthood. Critics are outraged, saying there is no link between pedophilia and homosexuality. Others support the move, saying you have to address the fact that 80% of the church's young sexual abuse victims were male. This hour on Point, the Catholic Church considers barring gay men from entering the priesthood. You can join the conversation. Is the church linking homosexuality and pedophilia here? Do you? Is this the answer to the church's problems? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That is 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio is Michael Paulson, religion reporter for the Boston Globe and co-author of Betrayal, Crisis in the Catholic Church. He was part of the Globe team that unearthed much of the clergy sexual abuse scandal. The paper won a Pulitzer Prize for its coverage. Michael Paulson, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to hear a lot of voices in this hour, but we want to begin by getting the nuts and bolts on the table. There is this document or proposal coming out of the Vatican on gays in the seminary, and then there's the visitation of all the 229 seminaries in America by a troop reviewing, among other things, homosexual activity or homosexuals who are in these seminaries. Can you walk us through the pieces of what's afoot here, Michael?
Sure. You're exactly right that there are two separate but related things going on. The first is that in the wake of the sexual abuse crisis, all of the cardinals of the United States went to meet in April 2002 with Pope John Paul II to talk about what to do next. And one of the things they decided they should do is take a look at all of the seminaries in the United States to see if there was something going wrong with the training of future priests. Mm-hmm. That investigation is just now getting underway this month. All 229 seminaries are being looked at by teams of bishops and priests, and they have a list of questions they are supposed to ask, drafted by the Vatican. One of the things they're supposed to look for is evidence of homosexuality. They're also supposed to look for something that the Vatican calls particular friendships, which is a sort of 1950s term mm-hmm. for friendships among men that are perceived to be too close.
And this team led by the Archbishop of the Catholic Church in the U.S. military.
That's right. It's actually multiple teams that go out. There are different teams at each seminary.
I should say the overall effort of visiting.
The effort is being led by Archbishop Edwin O'Brien, who oversees the military chaplains in the United States.
And he's been pretty straightforward. He said earlier this month, anyone who has engaged in homosexual activity or has strong homosexual inclinations should not be admitted to a seminary.
That's correct. There are multiple bishops who have said similar things, and the Vatican has been fairly clear on this point, and this leads us to the second issue, which is that for several years now, the Vatican bureaucracy has been working on a document addressing the question of whether or not gays ought to be admitted to seminaries in the first place. Now, the Vatican has long said that men who are homosexual ought not to be admitted, but that policy has been largely ignored, especially here in North America. There is a proposal from the Vatican bureaucracy to ban gay seminarians, and that proposal is now on the desk of Pope Benedict XVI. He's widely expected to sign it and issue it this fall, but it's possible he could not do so.
What is the thinking in or behind that document? Is it a matter of church teaching and doctrine that priests should not be gay, or is this a practical response to, or what's perceived as a practical answer to the problem of church clergy sexual abuse?
I think for many in the church hierarchy would see it as a practical response. They believe that gay men struggle more than straight men with celibacy, and many of them believe that homosexuality is linked to the abuse crisis because the preponderance of the victims were male and many of them were adolescents.
Is that the considered opinion of the bishops who have looked at this? Is it the considered opinion of psychologists and others who look at the whole pattern of pedophilia in and outside the church?
Well, understand this decision on whether to issue this document is being made by a very small handful of high-ranking bishops in Rome. There are apparently some bishops in America who would like not to see this document issued. But in Rome, there is considerable concern about the sexual environment in the United States broadly and in the church more particularly. And I think there is a sense that homosexuality and the abuse crisis are linked, and that's one reason that they want to pursue this ban on gay seminarians.
Now, this is aimed at new seminarians. That is, the bar would not include those who are already in seminaries or who already are already active priests. Is that correct?
That's right. This would apply to the way candidates for the priesthood are screened. Already, if you apply to get into seminary, they ask you about your sexual history. They ask you whether you've had sex with men or women, mm-hmm. how long ago. There's an expectation at most seminaries that you will already have been celibate for some period of years, 3 to 5, before you begin seminary, to show that you have at least attempted to live the celibate lifestyle.
So with these very straightforward questions that have been asked and are going to be asked, I don't know, what is known about what portion of Catholic priests in America are gay? Is there a clear number out there? Any idea at all?
There is not. This is a very difficult subject to study, and as you can imagine, few priests are willing to talk openly about their sexuality because the church has not been all that thrilled about gay priests. But the estimates range as high as 50%.
And what about the seminaries? I'm reading here some conservative seminary leaders being very critical of homosexuals in the church. Are there other seminaries that are or are known as bastions of gay influence within the Catholic Church in the States?
I think there is variation among seminaries, but very little is known scientifically about what's going on. Now, clearly, the former Archbishop of Philadelphia, Cardinal Bevilacqua, has said for several years that he was banning gays from seminaries. Other bishops have said as long as gay men are celibate, then they are qualified to be priests, just like straight men who are celibate. So there's variation among the seminaries.
Michael, what are the implications of this? And we're going to talk about the pro and con, and people are fiercely divided on whether this makes sense at all as a response to the sexual abuse scandal. But what about the implications for the priesthood itself? I mean, we've heard for years of the trouble it's had in attracting new members. If this new hurdle is put across that door, if as many as 50%, and again, as you say, it's unknown, but if that high a portion may be gay, is this the kind of gutting of the ranks of priests in the United States?
Yeah. I think you have to think about implications in two ways. The first is the question you asked about the priesthood, and my own guess is that the implication will be minimal. The number of guys entering seminaries right now is very low, and in the last few years, they've become much more conservative. I think you'll hear Brian St. Paul say later in the hour that he believes that the number of gays in seminaries right now is lower than it was a decade ago. And I think, frankly, many men who are considering entering the priesthood, if they're committed to doing so, will simply lie or hide their past if they're determined to get in. You understand this is just a question and answer session.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an element of guys who are confused about their sexuality as they approach the priesthood. Obviously, some people are not entirely clear about where their sexuality is heading at the age at which they enter the priesthood. But I think there's a broader question about the implications on the Catholic population in the United States, and I think that's where the implications are going to be more significant, because I think that this reinforces concerns that a large number of progressive Catholics have had about the direction that the church is moving in, and that some people are going to be further alienated from the church by perceiving that it's increasingly intolerant.
And again, we'll look at that with more voices in just a few minutes. But let me ask you, Michael, you were part of this team that dug very deeply into this huge scandal around the sexual abuse of youths by priests. What did you find? Did you see a link, numerical or otherwise, between homosexuality and child sex abuse? I mean, we don't like to think in those terms, and maybe it's, you know, people are saying all kinds of things, that it's true, that it's an absurd connection. You dug around in here a lot. What did you see?
We can't find any scientific studies that show a link between homosexuality and child abuse.
What about in practice in the Catholic Church in the United States?
Well, I mean, there is the kind of inarguable statistical reality that the majority of children who were abused by priests, as reported over the last 50 years, were male, and many of them were adolescents. So you
Does
start
that
with
mean
that
their
fact.
Abusers were homosexual, or simply that they had proximity to, choir boys?
Well, this is the argument. Is it a reflection of homosexuality, or is it simply the availability of boys because boys were altar servers, boys were more easily spending time with priests? And that's an argument that I think your guests will have back and forth on. There is no scientific research that would resolve that.
Behind all of this stands the issue of priestly celibacy. And, of course, if that requirement were not there, you'd have perhaps a completely different demographic or profile of priests in the U.S. Is that anywhere on the table with this Catholic Church, with this Pope?
Well, you know, priestly celibacy is everywhere on the table in the pews. People talk about the possibility of a married priesthood or even women priests all the time. But at the upper levels of the church, those topics are forbidden. And this pope is not open to changing either the requirement for celibacy or the requirement for a male priesthood.
Pope Benedict was known as a very conservative advisor to Pope John Paul II. He seems to have been trying to ameliorate that reputation in recent weeks. Just meeting in the last few days with Hans Küng, the sort of renegade German theologian. Is he likely to put his own stamp on this bar on gay seminarians?
Absolutely. This is a very important first decision for him. It's going to get a huge amount of play in the United States. It already has months before the document is even issued. This is a significant decision for him.
And does it mean, you know, I'm reading John Allen here, the Vatican correspondent for the National Catholic Reporter, saying that this is an barring gay priest in an Italian sense, which is very loose and doesn't mean strict. And don't be so Anglo-Saxon about it. There will still be gays coming into the Catholic priesthood.
Sure. One thing that folks talk about is whether or not whatever document is issued actually defines what the Vatican means by homosexuality. Do they mean someone who is currently sleeping with other men, or do they mean someone who once had a same-sex attraction, or do they mean something in between? How you define what exactly you mean by the people you would bar could have a big difference on how this policy is implemented.
There's a lot more we're going to dig into here. Michael Paulson, we're glad you're with us. Please stand by. We are talking about the Catholic Church considering a ban on gays in the priesthood. You can join the conversation. If 80% of the young people abused by priests were boys, does that mean gay priests should go? Or is that a red herring? Is this a witch hunt? Do you think the Vatican will confirm its draft policy, no gays in Catholic seminary? Should it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Catholic Church considering a ban on gays in the priesthood. You can join the conversation. What do you think? The Church appears to be making a link between homosexual priests and pedophilia. Do you? Gay Catholics, what do you make of this push? Lay Catholics, is this the answer to child sexual abuse in the Church, or is it misconceived? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. A visitation of all 229 Catholic seminaries in the United States currently underway, led by the Archbishop of the U.S. military, Edwin O'Brien. And he's made himself very clear. Anyone who has engaged in homosexual activity or has strong homosexual inclinations, he says, should not be admitted to a seminary. What do you think? 1-800-423-TALK is the number. We've been joined by Michael Paulson, religion reporter for the Boston Globe, part of the Pulitzer Prize-winning Globe team that played such an enormous role in unearthing the child abuse scandal in the church. I'm joined now as well in the studio by Edward Vasek, chair of the Moral Theology Department at Weston Jesuit School of Moral Theology. It's a graduate divinity school. He's been a Jesuit priest for 32 years. Father Vasek, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
And from Washington by Brian St. Paul. He is editor of Crisis Magazine, a conservative Catholic monthly which covers politics, culture, and the church. Brian St. Paul, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Mr. St. Paul, to you first. What do you think of this move by the Vatican on the large issue of gays in the church and the visitation of American cemeteries? Seminaries.
That would be quite a different thing.
Yes, that would be. Going too far.
That's true. They are two separate issues. The Vatican seminary visitation is something I think that everyone can agree on. Now, the specifics of what they're looking for, that's where the disagreement comes in. Now, the issue of homosexuality, I think that this is a valid thing to look at. We have this scandal, and we castigated the bishops for it, and rightly so. But we cannot then condemn them for looking at factors that stand out in their investigation of the same scandal. And that 81% male victims, I mean, that's significant. That is significant. And we would be doing the church, the priests, and the bishops themselves a disservice if we fail to look at that.
But what if it's too easy? I'm looking here, the executive director of the Survivors Network of those abused by priests. This is Dan Closey saying this is simplistic blame shifting. He says the real problem here is that this scandal was covered up by the hierarchy. He says don't look to individual priests. Look to the hierarchy. There's the crux of the issue. What do you say to that, Brian St. Paul?
But see, I think that confuses the issue here. There are two problems. First was the pedophilia itself, or the pederasty itself. Mm-hmm. And then there was the cover-up. Now, the pederasty, that comes from the failures in seminary formation, failures in screening out candidates for the priesthood. The cover-up, now that's something that is solidly in the lap of the bishops. So I think these are two separate issues. And I don't want to sound like I'm coming from an extreme here, because I think that there are two extremes, and I don't think we should follow either one. The one says, of course, that the issue of homosexuality is a complete red herring and ought to be ignored, or we need to look at other things. And then the other one is the idea that screening homosexuals out of the seminary is some kind of magical solution for all that ails the church. The fact is, I come down in the middle there, where clearly there's the issues of the hierarchy that need to be addressed, and homosexuality is clearly a factor in this, and that's the only way to explain this number. But it is by no means the only factor in this, and it is certainly not to say.
Excuse me, but a ban is a ban. I mean, if that's what comes out of this, a ban on gay seminarians, that's fairly black and white.
That's true, but it is a factor. I mean, it's a factor that needs to be addressed. There are no clear and easy solutions. This is a practical solution, as you mentioned earlier on, as Michael mentioned. And so it isn't going to solve the problem completely. There will be gay seminarians who would quite likely be fine priests who will not be able to enter the priesthood. That's a very, very sad reality. I know several fine gay priests myself. They're committed to chastity, and they live out their vocation wonderfully. But this is a practical solution, and unfortunately some of these kinds of things are going to happen because of the outrage of the scandal.
Brian St. Paul, stand by. Edward Gvasik, I want to bring you in here. Brian describes this as a practical solution to child sex abuse in the Catholic Church. Two questions. First, is it a practical solution in your view? And secondly, you're the chair of moral theology. Is it moral?
I'd have troubles on. I have, I think, something to say on both of those. First, I agree with Brian. I think that it is a practical matter. And to answer an earlier question that you gave, it's not a dogmatic question. This has nothing to do with dogma. Were it to be so, then the church has had gay bishops and gay priests all throughout its history, and those sacraments have all been fine. So
you're saying the church is not acting here from doctrinal conservatism, but rather in response to a particular problem, challenge.
Exactly. And further evidence of that is that the ban here is supposed to include not only future priests, seminarians, but also all people who go into religious life. I'm a Jesuit of Society of Jesus, and the ban is supposed to involve also us. So it has nothing to do, it is not a dogmatic kind of an issue.
So when you say it is a practical solution, then are you accepting the premise that if you bar gays from entering seminary, over time you solve the problem of child sexual abuse in the church?
The answer to that is it's a bad practical solution. It is a practical solution, but it's a bad practical solution.
Why?
Partly for the reasons that Brian mentioned, and that is that the number of people who have been abused, it's a serious, terribly serious problem, but a large part of that abuse has been by heterosexuals. I recently talked to somebody, and the statistics on this are very weak, of course, but about two-thirds of the abusers have been heterosexual in their orientation. One-third, at least so the report goes, one-third have been homosexual. So if you want to get rid of all possible pedophilia or all possible ephebophilia, then you have to ban everybody except somebody who's neutered.
So we should bar homosexuals and then bar heterosexuals, and we'll solve it.
That would solve the problem, yes. Okay. But the other side of it is that we have a famous case here in Boston, the James Porter, who abused children. Mm. He went on, left the priesthood, got married, and continued to abuse people. So celibacy didn't solve it. Heterosexuality didn't solve it. He continued to abuse people, partly because it's a disease, partly because it's a sin, partly because it's a crime, and all of those things get warped into one human mind.
And what about on the moral front? The Catholic Church does have teachings on homosexuality. Mm-hmm. They're not entirely favorable.
That's right.
At the same time, is it moral to exclude a whole portion of the Catholic body, if you will, from the priesthood?
I'm a member of the Society of Jesus, as I mentioned, and I'm privy to letters that have coming out from at least one of the provincials of the Society of Jesus, which acknowledge that we have, which make very clear that we have a non-discrimination policy. And that puts it in the framework of a justice issue. It is wrong to discriminate against people unless there's good reason to do so. And the fact that homosexuals can be celibate, are celibate, do act celibately, indicates that this is an unfair and unjust discrimination. If there were a clear correlation, then you might have some case. But since there's a very fuzzy correlation, and since so many fine priests, gay priests, are fine priests, I think it's really an unjust factor.
So we'll look at this issue of correlation. Michael Paulson, one number that came up here I want to put to you is Ed Vasek cites studies that say 2/3 of the abusers were heterosexual. Did you find that in your reporting?
No, we did not find any real scientific reporting that was able to determine some breakdown of sexuality of abusers. And it's important to remember that there were various kinds of abusers, some of whom were molesting kids before puberty, some of whom were molesting adolescents, some of whom, like Father Porter, were serial abusers, and some of whom had a much smaller number of victims.
But it's a critical question if you're going to begin talking about barring gays from the seminary to know whether or not, in fact, gay priests were had a higher concentration of abusers among them.
Sure. I mean, but you can understand how difficult a question that is to research, given that you're asking people about criminal behavior when they're supposed to be A, celibate, and B, not having sex with children.
I want to bring one more voice into this conversation, if I may. Joining us from La Jolla, California, is Richard Seip. He's a former Roman Catholic priest, a psychotherapist with a specialty in treating and counseling clergy. He's author of Sex, Priests, and Secret Codes. Richard Seip, thanks for being with us.
It's good to be with you.
So you've looked at this professionally. We're talking here about this correlation that is being made in practice between homosexuality and child sex abuse by priests. Is it a good correlation, i.e., is it a legitimate correlation?
It's not legitimate. There is no scientific paper that correlates homosexuality with child abuse. I mean, for instance, we make the distinction very easily. When a 35-year-old man abuses a 13-year-old girl, we don't hit our forehead and say, oh, there go those damn heterosexuals again. We can easily make the distinction between sexual orientation and object of sexual desire. First of all, there is, and always has been, a larger number of homosexually oriented men in the priest than in the general population.
Mm-hmm.
That goes back centuries. Now, and there have been saints, popes, founders of orders, reformers of orders who are homosexual in orientation and are saints. There's no question about that. The second thing is, don't forget that the idea of sexual orientation is a very new idea, scientifically and psychologically. Before, both moralists and scientists judged activity not as an orientation. They didn't have that concept. It was what you did if you acted in a certain way. And that act orientation has changed. So now we have the concept of orientation. Now, what is orientation? As somebody else said, because you're oriented in a certain way does not mean you're going to act in a certain way.
Though an awful lot of Americans in recent decades have made much of coming out of the closet and embracing orientation as an identity and saying, we have a right to an orientation, we proclaim it, and here we are. They seem pretty straightforward on that front. But let me ask you about, you referred to the scientific research on this and said no paper correlates homosexuality and child abuse. Do you mean in the general population, or do you mean within the particular structure of the church itself, which may not be indicative of the sort of general kind of society people live in?
Well, that's in any scientific group, in any group studied at all.
Has a study been done of the church environment in particular?
Well, yes, there has been. But what comes out is the psychosexual immaturity of clergy. In all of the recent studies in the last 50 years of priests, that about 75% are either psychosexually underdeveloped or maldeveloped. Look at the study that the bishops themselves commissioned in 1972 by Kennedy and Heckler.
Mm.
I have read over 1,000 reports psychological reports, legal reports of pre-sexual abusers over and over and over in their history. You know what comes through? Immaturity. I mean, I read Father Porter's report from St. Mary's Seminary before he was ordained. He is, and I quote, a man's man and will do a lot of good. The point is, he was also immature. These people, people who tend to sexually abuse.
And in his case, a serial sexual predator. Brian St. Paul, join us again here from Washington. We're hearing two voices saying this correlation is not a good one. In fact, it's wrong. It's a bad one. And if you want to start banning people, you're going to have to ban heterosexuals, too. How do you respond to that?
Well, 2 points. Number one, clearly the 81% male victim, this clearly needs to be looked at more closely. Father Vasek mentioned that two-thirds of the victims were two-thirds of the abusers were heterosexual. I think that would need to be verified. That's the first I've actually heard of that. So that's one point. The second point is that the issue of the scandal isn't the only reason to do this. This is the one that's in the news right now because this is most pertinent in terms of the events that are going on.
What else is there?
Well, imagine this. I think there's just a practical consideration. Would anyone think it would be a good idea to take a male heterosexual seminarian, send him to an all-girls college, where he lives in an exclusively women's dorm and is surrounded 24/7 almost exclusively by young women, and then that seminarian is told to learn celibacy, chastity, focus on his studies? I mean, this is unreasonable. I mean, it's an unfair situation to put him in, and yet this is exactly what we're suggesting for young gay men who we are suggesting we might put them in the same situation.
So you're saying unfair to the men itself. Edward Vasek, this is the alcoholic in the liquor store argument. Don't put these poor people in this situation. It's only going to tempt them and bring them to fall.
That conjures up all sorts of things in the imagination. When I look at my 20-some years teaching in a seminary, that just isn't the case. In other words, what we have is we have men who have long, especially those who are homosexual, have long habituated themselves to not being involved or not being attracted in that sort of a way. And they're also very involved in the outside world. The same thing is true of the heterosexuals. The heterosexuals go out on the street. They have classes with women, and they would have the same sorts of problems. So I think that's really a red herring, although I wouldn't want to deny that there's not some truth to it, but I live with many, many, many gay men who have had no such problems. And it's much like we would want to take in the showers in the typical gymnasiums. Well, oftentimes they're men or with men, and no college would want to ban gay men from college just because they might be taking a shower together.
Yeah, we do
Can
have
I
to live.
Can I put something out? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Richard Seib.
You know, it's like the government saying, look, we're going to eliminate sex in prisons. And so we're going to have prisons that only have heterosexual men in them. And, then we're going to eliminate sex in prisons.
But what do you say to Brian St. Paul raises the 81% of victims being young males? How do you respond to that, Richard Seib?
Well, it's a false conclusion. Yeah, there is no connection between homosexuality and sexual abuse. There are more homosexuals in the priesthood than general population, yes. But don't forget circumstance. You know, the Nazis said, we eliminate all gays from the SS. And the result was what? They had more and a great deal of homosexual activity.
This is the "it will drive it underground" argument you're making.
Well, you're comparing apples and oranges. Sex is sex, and because of the sex of priests with boys, it is a question of immaturity. It is a question of lack of maturity. And the other thing is, they're looking in seminaries to reinforce orthodoxy. Now, also the false assumption that if you are orthodox, if you have a strict orthodox ideation, that then you are going to behave morally in a different way.
And you're looking at it and saying, not so fast, not so sure it's going to work. We have to take a break. And Richard Sipe, I know we have to let you go. We're so grateful to you for being with us. Richard Sipe, author of Sex, Priests, and Secret Codes, psychotherapist, joining us this morning from La Jolla, California. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
We're talking about the Catholic Church considering a ban on gays in the priesthood. Michael Paulson of the Boston Globe is with us. Brian St. Paul, editor of Crisis Magazine. Ed Vasek, chair of the Moral Theology Department at Weston Jesuit School of Moral Theology. You can join us as well. Is there a better answer, allowing priests to marry? And what happens to the priesthood if gay men are barred? 1-800-423-8255. This is On Point.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital, for more than 60 years helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Catholic Church considering a ban on gays in the priesthood in apparent response to the child sex abuse scandal of the priesthood that has rocked the church in the United States and beyond. You can join us 1-800-423-8255. We've been keeping a lot of callers waiting, and I want to turn to them. Bob is calling from Quincy, Massachusetts. Hi, Bob. You're on the air. What do you think?
Well, I'm a former Catholic myself, and having been raised a Catholic with members of the clergy in my family, I feel very strongly about the church, and there's a reason that when I was a child, there were three parishes within close proximity to my house, and each one of them had seven or eight masses, and you had to stand in the back of the church if you got there late.
But you're out of the church. Why, Bob?
Because the church has lost its moral leadership because of whether it started long before this child abuse situation came out. But the church used to stand for morals and ethics and decency, and it never even occurred to me as a child that any member of the clergy would be gay.
Would banning gays from seminaries improve that moral standing to your mind?
It's a start. It's a start. I'm in favor of gay marriage. I'm in favor of civil union. That's a civic public situation. The Catholic Church is an institution which should be leading its parishioners in the ways of moral, ethical, proper guidance.
But Bob, let me ask you, we've heard here today that you've had Catholic saints, Catholic popes, gay priests since time immemorial.
It wasn't known to the practitioner, to the public, to the people going to mass.
But is that just naivete? Does it matter if they were moral leaders?
It's what you believe is what counts. Is whether you think the priest is a person should be revered and admired, or the nun is a person to be respected for their commitment to God and their commitment to the church and their commitment to ethics and morals. And then you find out that they're pedophiles or homosexuals, or they're having affairs with married women in the church. It doesn't matter. If they haven't got the moral guidance to be leaders of the flock, then the church should throw them all out. It's better that we have five or four or three or one real priest who's really committed to the ethics and morals of the Catholic Church to lead us. The reason
could get pretty lonely out there, Bob, but we've got the view and we appreciate it. I want to turn to Michael Paulson, who's looking on here. Michael.
Yeah, I think Bob makes an interesting point that reminds us of a context that we haven't really touched on yet in this conversation, and that is that the broader context for this discussion of whether to ban gays from seminaries is that in the Western world, acceptance of homosexuality is on the rise, and that's a huge concern for Pope Benedict XVI and the men who surround him.
They're sort of getting on a collision course or at odds with the general social trend.
Right. Benedict views the church as countercultural, particularly in the West. The Vatican over the last several years has placed a huge emphasis on trying to combat the trend toward approval of same-sex marriage in Western countries. There's a great deal of concern about what the increasing acceptance of homosexuality means for heterosexual marriage. And so at the same time that there's that broad concern, we see this conversation about potentially banning gay seminarians, and I think it's probably Bob reminds us that we ought not to isolate this discussion about what's going on in seminaries from the broader political context.
Well, it also reminds me of what we heard from Pope Benedict, I think even when he was Cardinal Ratzinger, that a much smaller church, Bob says, even if we just have one good priest, that'll be enough. This pope seems to have accepted the idea that a much smaller church, if it's purer, would be preferable.
There's considerable debate about what exactly Benedict has meant. And as you mentioned earlier in the program, he has in recent days been reaching out to people you might not have expected him to reach out to. But certainly his track record over the last several decades has suggested, and many of his remarks have suggested, that he believes the Catholic Church ought to hold true to its traditional teachings, even if that means a smaller number of adherents.
Ed Vasek, you've been a priest for a long time. Here's Bob. He's left the church, our caller, but he says, you know, as a born and raised Catholic, I want to get more orthodox here. I want the straight and narrow reestablished, and if I was naive, well, shame on me, but let's fix it up. Is this a common perspective, in your view, within the church laity?
There are two groups there, and first, I'm sorry he felt he had to leave. There's some people who are looking for more orthodoxy and other people who are looking for less rigid orthodoxy, and you can't please both groups at the same time. So that's the first kind of a problem that you have there. I think that there's been no question that the leadership has been trying to say, here's what we stand for, here's what we are disagreeing with. When you're talking about the fact that priests are sinners, one should leave the church from the time of Jesus' death if you want to have a church without sinners. Because right from the New Testament, the church is full of sinners, and it's always been full of sinners.
And yet there have to be issues of degree there. The sex abuse scandal just went way over the top for everybody.
Exactly. That has to be taken into account. But if somebody wants only pure priests, I mean, pure priests in the sense they've never committed a sin, never done anything wrong, you have no clergy. Jesus came for sinners, not just for the righteous, as he said. Mm.
Judith is calling from Scituate, Massachusetts. Hi, Judith, you're on the air.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
This kind of discussion just drives me crazy because it's so far, it seems to me, from what maybe churches should be doing. When you talk about this, it's sort of, Christ never talked about screening and banning people, whether it's from the seminary or anything else in that, for that matter. There's no good reason, contrary to what one of your guests said, there's no good reason to discriminate. The church, I thought, was for teaching love and tolerance.
But Judith, what if the cardinals look at what's going on and say, we have to have some kind of practical response to this? Here's one step we could take.
Practical response. Mm-hmm. Let marriage happen for practical reasons within your church. Be it gay marriage or heterosexual marriage, doesn't matter. Let people marry so that they can create a reasonable and practical and more realistic society within their church. If there are those who wish to be celibate on their own, that's fine. But to insist on it is totally ridiculous and leads to obscene or obscure or peculiar situations, such as the one that we're having now with the scandal in the church. It's because of intolerance. And rather than tolerance, which is contrary to the moral and ethical ultimate teachings of Christ.
Judith, we've got it, and you state it very clearly. Brian St. Paul, let me put that to you. You're editor of the Conservative Crisis magazine. Judith says, if you really want to solve this, if you really want to be practical, let's do away with the requirement of celibacy.
Yeah, I appreciate Judith's comments. I don't think that's the solution. I mean, if you look percentage-wise, the largest group of pedophiles will be found among married men. So obviously, celibacy is not a cause here of this problem. Also, I don't think that Judith mentioned the problem with tolerance. He said the real problem is tolerance, but I don't think it was tolerance that was at the root of this sex abuse scandal. I don't even see how tolerance fits in. And finally, on the issue of the church should be about acceptance and nurturing, and I forget the exact term she used. I think that's misunderstanding the base of what Catholicism is. Catholicism is a worldview. It's a set of truth claims about something that occurred in history, in the past, present, and will occur in the future. So I think the faith is much more than just the social justice aspect of it, although that is a key part of the gospel. But I think it's more than just that.
I want to get another call here. Kenny is calling from Beaufort, South Carolina. Kenny, you're on the air.
Hello, how y'all doing?
We're well. What do you think of all this, Kenny?
Well, I think there's a lot of intelligent people talking here, so I better be careful. But, it's just so interesting. Anytime you mix religion, God, politics, laws, and human behavior and sin together, man, I'll tell you.
That's life.
There's really not people, it's going to happen regardless of what they do.
The sex abuse of children on the scale that we witnessed in the Catholic Church is going to happen no matter what?
No, we sensationalize that through the media.
What do you mean by sensationalize? How many thousands of victims would it require for you to consider it, you know, a real problem?
How many? I mean, what's the definition of sensation? I don't have the numbers. Is there 1,000 or is there 50? And over the course of what time?
Yeah, Kenny, according to the Bishop's own study, there were 10,667 victims between 1950 and 2002.
Okay. Is that the proper subject for a scandal?
I think then, shifting along those numbers,
mm-hmm.
I think that the gay issue is kind of a... It's a hybrid. It's a driver, and it's also very elusive. Your expert,
yes.
Your first expert said
mm-hmm.
it's been around forever, but
mm-hmm.
If anybody's gay that's on the line, personally, I feel that that's an unnatural thing to be gay, but that's not, you know, my personal beliefs and feelings need to be, we learn as Americans that we have to keep them at bay because they're not...
Yeah, there's a place for tolerance, but where do you come down then, Kenny? In favor of banning gays from Catholic seminaries or not?
I don't think I am. I mean, I don't think I have the right to judge somebody as a group. I just don't think I do. And my question is, what legal precedents does the church have, or don't they follow any kind of international law, or can they just decide to do that? I mean, that is discrimination.
That is a very interesting question. That's a terrific question, Kenny. Thank you for raising it. Michael Paulson, how about it? Can the church just do this under American law?
Yeah, sure. That's a very good question. American law is quite settled on this point. If there's anything that the separation of church and state means, it means that religious denominations can decide for themselves who can be clergy. There's absolutely no role for government here.
So they can, and that's that. Kenny, thanks for your call. Let's get here from Kana, calling from Boston. Hi, Kana. You're on the air.
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me over there?
Loud and clear. What do you think, Kana?
Well, I would say that as a survivor of sexual abuse when I was a young child...
And a female
by a male.
Mm-hmm.
My parents obviously are terribly against pedophilia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember
like
my
most
dad
parents.
Telling, I remember my dad talking to me about, well, then gays, which I wasn't even abused by a gay
mm-hmm.
person, that gays shouldn't even teach school. They shouldn't be able to be around children at all. And I wonder, since a lot of Americans judge or make their worldly assumptions through their religious affiliations, I wonder what this is going to do to the world outside of the church.
If the church establishes this as a precedent, what does it mean for gays in other fields? Kenny, it's a great question, and we thank you for calling. Brian St. Paul, what do you think? Are we seeing then a kind of social tilt against homosexuals because of the example of the church? Would you support that?
I don't think so, and I do think that that is an excellent question. We have to keep in mind here that the seminary is a thing different than anything else. It's not like college. It's not like the rectory. It's not like a school. A seminary is where a seminarian is turned into a new man. He's formed into something else, and that's where he learns the basics, how to live a celibate life, how to have a prayer life, how to think in a different way. And so in that instance, homosexuality would be, I think, an additional obstacle or an additional difficulty to that seminarian. And I don't think that same problem exists with, say, schools, because they're not around the kids 24/7. I mean, that's not the case. And, of course, most homosexuals, the vast majority, are not pedophiles and are just as disgusted about this as anyone else.
Ed Vasek, and what about it? Brian St. Paul was saying earlier, it's no favor to a homosexual man to put him into this environment. What did you say to that?
I say to it that it's a small problem, but easily manageable. And the proof of the pudding is that so many people do manage it. If there's a problem,
easily
here,
manageable. But we just heard 10,000 victims of abuse. You know, over a few decades, that doesn't seem to have been easily managed.
But again, that's different than being heterosexual or homosexual.
The general problem, in any case, not easily managed.
Sexuality is not easily managed by
Amen.
Men and women, heterosexual and and homosexual around. So it's a general human problem that is, has to be dealt with. If the seminaries are these hothouses, then one possibility, rather than discriminate against gays, is to change the situation of the seminary to make it more open rather than more the closed world that it tends to be. And so the kind of thing that we have done, at least the Society of Jesus has done, is our seminaries are quite open, and as a consequence, we don't have that hothouse kind of an atmosphere that other people seem to have.
And what about the very conversation here? Do you see it as destructive to homosexuals in and out of the church? Advancing.
Yes, it's very hard on them. It's very hard on them because one more time they're being stigmatized, and it's for this reason that people are giving have told me that, you know, this sort of thing drives them out of the church. This is a very it's a sad moment in that regard. Because it gives the impression that the church is against people who are gay. That is not the case. That's not the teaching of the church. The teaching of the church has been quite the opposite. The bishops of the state of Washington have said that homophobia, hating gays, is a far worse sin than any sin that the gay man or woman might commit while, as a homosexual. So it's a very bad thing in terms of the atmosphere that it creates for the world.
Michael Paulson, this word hothouse has come up a couple of times here. Is there a problematic hothouse culture in particular corners of the Catholic Church in the United States? Did you find that in your reporting? I'm not even sure what it means, but it suggests, you know, a kind of a sumps of sexual, I don't know, malfeasance, off the rails.
There have been a couple of books over the last 4 years that have argued that some seminaries are quite open to sexual activity among men. I haven't seen any independent evidence of that, and those tend to be more ideologically than scientifically driven. I do think it's important to put that number, 10,000 victims, in some context, and that is to say that according to the study done for the bishops by the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, 4% of priests abused minors over 50 years. Mm. So that means 96% of priests did not. So
and
if it's
potentially
a serious problem.
Half of priests potentially are gay, that means an awful lot of them did not.
That's right. That's right. And I wanted to go back to the caller's question about the impact on the broader society. I mean, obviously, this is taking place at a moment when a lot of issues surrounding homosexuality are quite polarizing in our political culture and in our religious culture. Many religious denominations are struggling with what to do about this. And in fact, part of what you're seeing is some religious denominations taking the opposite tack and reaching out to people, offering kind of a contrast to the Catholic Church, talking about in advertising and so on how welcoming they are to gays and lesbians. Mm-hmm.
A final thought, Michael Paulson, a reality check here. I think I heard you say, for all this conversation, I think I heard you say at the top of the hour, this is likely to happen and happen soon, this fall.
That's right. Pope Benedict is expected to issue this within the next month or two.
And you expect the Catholic Church hierarchy in the United States to accept and embrace this dictate, if that's the right word?
There's no question that the Catholic hierarchy will accept it in the sense that the Pope sets the rules. This is a hierarchical church. Embrace, I think, would be too strong, and I think it will remain to be seen how exactly it's implemented, how one would go about screening.
Ed Vasek, do you think it will be – will it happen? Will it be effective?
It probably will come out. How effective it will be remains to be seen. I'd like to analogize it to 1961 when Pope John the 23rd, the beloved Pope, put out a document that said that Latin – all seminary teaching must be done in Latin. People ignored it. In that same year, he put out a document that said that gays should not be accepted into the seminary. Latin is not taught, and gays have been accepted, and so it remains to be seen how this will turn out.
Well, the world rolls on, but it looks like new rules coming down the pike. I want to thank each of you for being with us. Edward Vasek, Chair of the Moral Theology Department at Weston Jesuit School of Moral Theology. Father Vasek, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure to be here.
Brian St. Paul, editor of Crisis Magazine, joining us from Washington. Brian, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
And Michael Paulson, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for the Boston Globe, co-author of Betrayal, Crisis in the Catholic Church. Michael, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.